WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. In recent days, hundreds of ducks and other birds have washed up dead along Chicago's lakefront, from Hyde Park to Wilmette. And last month, thousands of hens died on a farm in suburban Madison, essentially wiping out an entire flock. Avian flu has also been known to jump species, like at Lincoln Park Zoo, where it killed both a Chilean flamingo and a harbor seal. To learn more about the threat bird flu poses to livestock, pets, and maybe even you, we turn to UChicago infectious disease specialist Dr. Emily Landon and Annette Prince of Chicago Bird Collision Monitors. Annette started by explaining how far bird flu has spread. Here she is.
When we began having reports of birds, particularly waterfowl, in the middle of December, so we've been facing this problem for you know, going on 2 months here, and the majority of the birds that we were finding were out in the suburbs in eight counties around the area were having reports of sick or dead geese that were being found in numbers as big as 10, 20, 30 birds dead in a pond.
Mm-hmm. And was it immediate to you what had happened? Or did it take some time to sort of
I think when we brought the birds in, there was an anticipation, as is every winter, that bird flu could have come around. And I think these birds were sent out and tested early on in December, and they came back positive as having bird flu, just as the symptoms were indicating. These birds have tremors, they have neurologic problems, they stumble, they have trouble standing, sometimes they cannot fly, they have clouded eyes, they've got respiratory problems. And we continued to find these birds all the way into mid-January, but weren't finding a lot of things in Chicago immediately. But in the middle of last month, we started getting reports of geese and other birds. And it moved from geese onto hawks and owls, and we even had a bald eagle that we picked up that had the symptoms for avian influenza.
And that flamingo at the zoo that I mentioned.
Yes, the zoo and the harbor seal ended up being infected. And it was just this weekend that we started getting calls about a huge number of ducks that were being affected and being reported the whole length of the Chicago lakefront shoreline.
Dr. Landon, let's take a step back here then. What exactly is bird flu, and what are the signs that we need to watch out for?
Yeah, so influenza comes in a lot of different varieties. There are a number of different human influenzas that circulate each year. And then there are also influenzas that happen in pigs or in birds or in dogs. Your dog might get an influenza seasonal vaccine as well. And the avian influenza that we're talking about here, or the bird flu, happens to be of a specific variety called H5N1. We subtype our influenzas by their hemagglutinin and neuraminidase types, which is long, fancy words. H5N1 is good. And that is the same thing as bird flu, the same thing as H5N1, the same thing as high pathogenicity avian influenza, or HPAI, as you might hear someone like me talk about it. And that refers to it causing really serious disease in birds. But influenza viruses can cross species. And so this influenza virus that has been really, really dangerous in birds since the late 1990s, early 2000s, is also starting to infect cattle over the summer. And that's the first time that we've started to see so many cattle being infected. And the cattle don't get quite as sick as the birds, and so there's no need to cull the flocks or herds as the cattle might be. And so these cattle are then able to maybe pass on disease to humans or maybe to other birds and other wild birds. And epidemiologists and individuals who work in this field are really concerned about the mixing of different kinds of influenza viruses and the mixing between species and the ability for ongoing transmission to happen. And I think that's what we're seeing here. Lots and lots of different people, individuals, and then also different species affected.
Yeah. So how likely is it then that humans can get infected here? Because that's on a lot of folks' minds.
Humans definitely can get infected with avian influenza, but avian influenza doesn't transmit well from person to person. Bird to bird, super good, but human to human, not very good. And that has to do with the way that it infects different respiratory cells that we have and other things that are true about the virus. And we know influenza viruses really well. And so the really great virologist among us, of which I am not one, know exactly which mutations have to happen in order for this avian influenza to become one that would transmit from person to person. And we aren't quite there yet, but the more time, the more sort of replication that we have in different animal species, the more animals get infected, the more likely it is that they're going to hit on those mutations.
So, and is it then bird to human, I assume, right? Is it direct contact?
Bird or cow to human. So we know that it's usually direct contact, but there could be some really localized, you know, sort of really close. If you were really close with a cow who was breathing on your face that was infected, maybe you could get it that way. We think it's probably from milk splashes mostly in that situation. But from birds, it can be from their excrement. It can be from close contact. It can be from picking up a dead bird and then touching your mouth or nose. So I would recommend not having any contact with dead birds. I would stay as far away from them as possible. You also want your animals to stay away from them, which can be a little bit tricky.
And if you've been in contact with an infected bird, what do you do? Is there a vaccine for this, for humans?
There is a vaccine, but it's not very available, and we don't know how super effective it is for this particular strain. They're working on a newer vaccine for this, but at that point, a vaccine isn't really what you're looking for. If you've had contact with a dead bird, then you want to wash your hands and, you know, change your clothes, put your clothes in the wash with warm water. That'll kill it. And then I think you have to watch out for symptoms. And if you do get sick, then you want to talk to your doctor about that and make sure they know about your contact with a dead bird. So there are medicines we can use to treat this. And most infections in humans have been relatively mild. And about 94, 95% of them of individuals that have gotten bird flu, either from cattle or from birds, end up with conjunctivitis or pink eye, in addition to fever, cough, and shortness of breath, that sort of thing.
So Annette, what about a vaccine for animals? Like, is there a treatment option to prevent more dead birds along the lakefront?
I don't know. Perhaps we can. I may not be able to answer that. I'm not an epidemiologist either. I think that there are vaccines available for domestic stock, and that there are countries and locations that do vaccinate for different reasons, as opposed to wild birds would be a very challenging task to vaccinate all wild birds. But it would be hopeful that there'd be a way to at least protect the people who are dealing with wildlife, the people that are working with domestic animals, and the domestic stock, such that this virus, which is carried in wild birds and gets transferred by almost back and forth between domestics and wild birds, we could at least contain it some more and help prevent spread as much as possible.
Do you have anything to add, Dr. Landon, just regarding vaccines for these animals?
Yeah, so I'm not a veterinarian, but I would agree that it would be nearly impossible to vaccinate the wild bird population. But there are a lot of things we can do to help prevent transmission from birds and from cattle to humans. And a lot of it is the same way that we prevent transmission of influenza in hospitals, right? So you gotta make sure you wear appropriate PPE. So if you are the person taking care of birds or working with birds, you'll see pictures now in newspapers and online of people wearing full PPE protection suits and wearing gowns and gloves when they're handling birds. And you'll see people, you know, cleaning with disinfectants after birds have been there. So there are things that we can do. It's just that these have not been fully adopted by every single, you know, poultry farmer. And it can be hard for regular citizens to know what to do with the dead bird in their yard. Yeah.
Annette, do we know more about just sort of the cause of this spread? Because it just seems to be ramping up here locally, at least, in a way that we haven't really seen before?
It's certainly, we've had bird flu previously, but we really haven't seen these numbers before.
Right.
And the variety of birds that are being affected by it. It's something that's run its course. And we can't exactly explain why it's happening, but we do.
Like, what's different about this year?
Yeah. And we look at things. We hope that people are trying to, you know, track this and look into ideas of whether this is a factor of climate change, or is this just a one-off situation? Is this the new norm and we're going to have this every year? The intensity of it this year is hard to explain. We sometimes think that this comes down when birds migrate south into our area. Maybe it was brought down this into this area, and mm-hmm. it just may be, the fact that it's the strain of the virus is particularly strong this time.
Right.
So we're not sure what's causing it, but we would like to, because we can tell from our calls where there's different hot spots where it's very intense during certain periods of time. So it's interesting to watch it as it moved.
Sure.
From the suburban areas that we were finding it initially all the way into the lakefront area.
Yeah. And as we've been talking about, I mean, the virus poses the greatest risk, of course, to birds, but it has been known to jump species. I'm thinking of the risk then to other animals. Like, what if people are out walking their dogs along the lakefront, for instance, or, you know.
We advise people to have their dogs stay, or any pets, stay indoors. Like, for cats seem to be somewhat susceptible, more highly susceptible. So there's,
oh, really?
There's concerns about the feral cat populations, or anyone that lets their cat outside. Is it a dangerous time to have a cat outside?
Interesting.
Dogs or any walking through any area where there might be droppings, having your animal on leash and not approaching an animal that could be sick is a way to just minimize exposure risks.
So, Dr. Landon, what should people listening be doing just to reduce any risk of exposure? Like, should we be changing the foods that we eat or how we prepare it?
Well, I think the biggest risks for contracting the avian flu right now are having close contact with sick animals or dead animals. And so I would stay away from any dead wild birds. Make sure keep your dogs on a leash. Do not let them eat that goose poop, as tempting as it may be for them. That sort of thing is going to make a big difference. The second thing is worrying about what is coming to us from poultry and dairy farmers in the United States, where there have been significant outbreaks and there are ongoing significant outbreaks. And that means cooking chicken meat fully, which you should do for salmonella anyway.
Right.
And then also cooking eggs fully, which I know a lot of people like to have their eggs a little bit over easy, but I wouldn't recommend that at this moment because there's been just such an issue with poultry farmers.
I wouldn't recommend it either. No.
Yeah. And I think also the last piece is you really need to avoid drinking or having any unpasteurized dairy products at this time. Whatever you think about unpasteurized dairy products, I love pasteurization. I think it saves thousands of lives every year. It's definitely doing a lot of heavy lifting with the avian flu. And so let's stick to pasteurized products for now.
I'd like to add that one of the reasons that the spread moved to some other species is when geese were dying, a lot of birds that will prey upon a dead or sick animal, such as hawks, eagles, and owls, acquired the virus, we think, because they were eating the dead bodies that were there.
Yes.
And so when we've been on the lakefront, we've seen gulls and crows going after the sick birds on the beach or the dead birds. And we are now getting a big uptick in the number of gulls that we are being reported sick with bird flu. So it moves through the food chain. So one of the challenges, I think, is to have containment or removal of the animals that have died, mm-hmm. such that they don't remain there to expose other birds or predators, coyotes, whatever it could come upon this animal.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
So removing, we think part of the containing the spread is removing the birds that are dead.
Yeah.
In large numbers sometimes.
Moving them quickly. Yeah. We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Annette Prince, who's director of Chicago Bird Collision Monitors, and Dr. Emily Landon, who's an infectious disease specialist with the University of Chicago. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. The conversations we have on the show are meant to bring you deeper understandings on what's going on in the world around us with curiosity and insight. Hit subscribe wherever you listen to never miss an episode, or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.